honestly, after I had been there for 2 days, I felt like I just fit in, and you just feel like you belong there. I felt completely safe. Everywhere we could walk, we would walk.
To me, this is like the Bitcoin Citadel that people are talking about, right? It's not like a zombie apocalypse sort of thing. It's like a peaceful community that opts in, just like we opt into Bitcoin, that opts into sort of a way of life and a way of living.
I paid with Bitcoin. Easiest transaction in the world. I mean, it was so fast, so simple. And that's how we're building our home too, you know?
How long have you been doing Carnivore? And then tell me the story of how you got into that.
So I've been doing it for 25 years.
That's incredible.
I didn't realize it at the time, but he was always about 10 years ahead of everything. Like he was like my mentor at the time. I just didn't know it.
Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have Corey Martin. He's a client of the Bitcoin Way. He is the quintessential Bitcoiner. So he is doing the Plan B thing. He's self-custodying his Bitcoin. He's a carnivore, does Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's a weightlifter. We had an awesome conversation. You need to stick around to the end. He gives his 2-minute protocol for working out that he does one time per week to stay fit. But this is an awesome guy. Great conversation. Think you'll really enjoy it. Hey, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Corey here. Corey, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm excited for this conversation. So we had a chance to chat yesterday for a little while. We hadn't met before and had a great conversation. You've got you hit all of the all of the check boxes of a quintessential Bitcoiner. And so we're going to start with one that is very near and dear to our hearts at the Bitcoin Way. And we talk a lot about the Plan B residency. You've gone through that process. You just got back from Panama with the team and would love to hear about your experience there. What was it like and how has that gone?
Yeah. So last Thursday, actually, we just got back, which marked my third trip there. So every time I've been there, it's been absolutely incredible. I mean, the first time that we went there, I just traveled there with my son. And you know, the first day or two is a little overwhelming because you're in the city. It's a big city. But honestly, after I had been there for 2 days, I felt like I just fit in, and you just feel like you belong there. I felt completely safe. Everywhere we could walk, we would walk at night, during the day, whatever it was, never felt uncomfortable at all. The people are amazing. The food is incredible. The climate, the culture, just everything about it. Every time I come back, I tell people about it. And I'm like, I can't imagine anyone not liking it. It would just amaze me if they didn't like it. You know, and then we try to set things up. The first couple of trips when we were there, we were doing things with our residency. So as they plan, it's kind of hard to plan things to do during the day, you know, if you want to take tours or trips or something. But this last trip, I ended up taking my daughter and a friend of hers, and I'd had nothing to do there per the residency. So we just kind of hung out and planned trips every day. And we always took trips to Veritas villages. Always got to see that. It's awesome. Every time we get back, I can't wait. I already have my next trip planned.
So do you spend more of your time talking to people about Bitcoin or Panama?
I would say probably more about Bitcoin.
Okay.
But still both, but it just depends on the topic of the how it comes up. I just spoke with somebody that I work with the other day. He asked me about it and he said, you know what? My wife and I are planning a trip. And he goes, I'm definitely going to go to Panama. He goes, Corey said.
Good. I love to hear it, man. So what was it exactly about? You told me that you'd been considering a Plan B for quite some time. And it sounds like even before maybe some of the more recent concerns with the way that sort of Western cultures are headed. So it's been on your radar, but it's just in the last, year and a half or so that you actually sort of proceeded with this. How did you land on Panama, and has your opinion on what a Plan B represents to you shifted at all in light of sort of the way the world seems to be headed?
Yes, it has. I always had plans of moving abroad, and since 2016, Now, it hasn't always been Panama. In the beginning, I wanted to move to Costa Rica. I didn't really know a lot about it, and I just knew that I just wanted to move somewhere where the weather was a really big part, culture was a huge part. And so I kind of was stuck on that for a while. I would pick out spots where I wanted to live and just kind of research it a little bit. And so that was on my list for a few years. And then after that, I kind of changed my mind a little bit and I wanted to move to Ecuador. Kind of the same, you know, Ecuador, Panama, Costa Rica, they have a lot of the same similarities. And so I wanted to move there for a while. And after that, in 2018, I happened to move out to California and I was working with somebody that was from Panama. And we just got talking, became pretty good friends. And he just asked me what I liked and like what kind of area, what kind of weather, what, you know, just everything, where I'd want to be. And he said, man, you would love Panama. And there's a town probably 7 hours outside of the city called Boquete. And that's where I wanted to move. You know, I'm like, that's where I'm going to go. And I researched that really hard. So then up until like the last year and a half, since I became a client of Bitcoin Way, that's when all this started to unfold. And I'm like, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. You know, and I pulled it like immediately. I pulled the trigger. I signed up right away and signed up for a residency right away and did everything. And so, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about Veritas Villages, because I had reached out to them about some information. I've seen the pictures, never been there. Could you explain for people what that is, like what the community is like and, you know, what exactly you're sort of buying into there?
Yep. So whenever they get a new group to go to Panama for the residency, one of the trips planned is to Veritas Villages. So they bus you there. And then when you get there, they'll do a presentation of, you know, what they have in mind. So basically it's an eco village. It's on this particular one is on a 55 acre site. It's 1,000 feet above sea level. And it's completely self-contained. I think I'm right on this. The only thing that they're tied into the municipalities would be the sewer. They have their own water. They have 400-foot wells. They've got a water tank up there to supply the entire village. I think there's 87 lots on there. Every home is powered with its own separate solar system with battery backup, and they've got. There's going to be a lot of amenities there. They'll have a community pool. There's going to be a restaurant. They got their own gardens. I mean, the gardens are incredible. The stuff that grows there. They're going to contract with a local farmer for their own beef. They're going to raise chickens. They'll probably have horses. You literally would never have to leave there if you didn't want to. There's a smaller town, probably 10 minutes away called Coronado, which is a beach town. So if you did need anything, it would just be it'd be easy to do. The homes right now, there's 5 homes started on the property. I believe by the end of this year, some of them should be completed. The home construction is incredible. I mean, it'll last forever. I mean,
yeah. Tell me a little, you were telling me about that you said even like relative to the United States, the homes you see being built, these were like works of art.
Yeah. A lot of them have like vaulted ceilings. Everything is steel structures, steel beams instead of using wood for trusses or rafters. Even the walls, the vertical walls are all made out of steel. I don't know how thick they are, maybe eight inches thick for sure. Everything is, it looks like concrete and steel. And it's incredible construction. And it doesn't even seem like a lot's going on there when you're there, but I mean, you know, they get everything done every time we go there. So Jorge, who's the construction manager there, every time we go there, so they have a little bus there. Patrick bought a bus to take people on the tour, but I never seem to manage to make it on there. So I just take a separate trip with Jorge and then we all kind of pile in his truck and he kind of takes us on a little private tour and, you know, just explains everything and get to see a lot more. And it's, Yeah.
Do you know if they're going to have a gym there for you to work out?
So I don't know if I talked to them about this or not. So I'm going to have some stuff, what I want. I'm going to have a separate room built in my place to accommodate that. So I'm just going to have my own stuff. I'm hoping, I didn't talk to anybody about this yet, but I'm hoping that I could do like some personal training there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, we're gonna get to your weightlifting journey, because it sounds like it's been a long one. I think Tony told me that the community garden he was asked, because he said it was incredible.
Yeah,
it's maybe twice as twice as big as it needs to be to support the community, and they're gonna resell like the excess into the community or something. Does that seem? Maybe I'm misremembering. Does that seem right though?
So talking with Jorge, they thought that because there's such an abundance of food, there's an orphanage and there is a hospital close by, so they're actually just going to donate anything left over. So the people that live in the community will, you know, kind of get first dibs on everything, and then whatever's left over, they're just going to donate it.
That's awesome, man. Do you happen to know if they still have any lots available?
There are a few.
Okay.
When I bought mine, so my very first trip back, I don't think I was home for more than 3 days, and I decided that I was going to buy a lot. So I got that end of it going. And at that time, I think it was 60% full, and that was a year ago. So there are some left, not very many though.
Yeah. I can't imagine. As people find out about this, they've got to be intrigued. It just seems amazing. So you said you're more, you told me you're more of like, you appreciate being away from the hustle and bustle of the city, but close enough proximity. What's in Panama? My understanding is Panama City is a large, vibrant city. Lots going on. Veritas Village is a bit removed from that. What's like overall, what's your impression of Panama as it comes to sort of the ability to have the city life, the ability to get away and have a quieter space? How do you find the balance to be?
It's good. There's a lot of people that really enjoy the city. That's just not where that's not my background. It's, you know, if you want to go out and you want to have, you know, you want to go to some rooftop bars, I mean, obviously they have some amazing ones and the food's incredible. So, and it's pretty easy. I think the city has 2.2 million people and it's easy to get around. I've never driven. We always take Ubers, but you can go anywhere in that city for like $3. So in relation to that, like with Veritasville, I just like being, you know, if I want all that of Panama City, I can get that in Coronado. It's essentially the same except smaller.
Okay. So it's not like a small town. It's got sort of a bit of a nightlife.
They do.
Okay.
They do.
Yeah. So you said you visited and then signed up you think you were home 3 days or so, and then you signed a contract. What was it that, because all of this sounds amazing. I think anyone listening would say, oh yeah, this sounds all else equal. If it was free, you know, whatever. Yeah. I can totally understand why you'd buy a place there. Is it either a second home or, you know, maybe to move? What was it for you that clicked where you had this moment where you said, I'm going to invest in this place and I'm going to, you know, sounds to me like likely plant roots there here in the coming years. What was it that shifted your mindset?
Kind of all that stuff I said, you know, a little bit earlier, but it just working with Veritas Villages is so easy. You know, they are involved in a lot, and they're not just doing these villages here. You know, they've got them in Nicaragua. They've got, you know, I think they're starting some in Costa Rica. So they're all over. So they're obviously very busy, but they kind of make you feel like you're their only customer. It just super easy to work with. Everything runs really, really smoothly. Whether I stay there for the rest of my life, I don't know. I'll probably end up maybe going somewhere else further up into the mountains eventually. But I just thought this is a really, really good place to start. And everybody in that community is Bitcoin. You know, they accept Bitcoin for payment. You can pay any way you want. Bitcoin, I paid with Bitcoin, easiest transaction in the world. I mean, it was so fast, so simple. And that's how we're building our home too, you know? And yeah, just every just working with them was such a pleasure.
Oh yeah. Peer to peer, electronic cash, in the 1,000 feet up in Panama. It doesn't sound like such a bad deal. Is there something, I think I remember, I had Patrick on the podcast a while back. I think I remember him talking about Bitcoin mining being a yes. potential element either. Is it for heat or is it just because there's so much solar power generation that you can effectively earn sats mining and live for free? Like your cost of living is effectively nothing once you've purchased the property and all of that. Is something along those lines accurate?
Right. And right now, actually, so they have a little community center where everybody gathers when you first go there for that presentation. They have a Bitcoin miner running in the background. You can hear it's an ASIC miner. You know, you can tell when they're running. So as far as like in the homes, if you choose to run a miner, the solar, the system that they're going to have in place will run one miner. I have, I mine also. I do have more. I was talking to Spencer, Patrick's son, about increasing the size of my service. And I told him what I wanted to do. And he said, man, that's going to be quite a feat because it would be so large. So I'm going to scale down. I'll probably just run one. And so there are HOA fees involved with owning a home there, but they're really minimal. It's based on the size of your home, the cost of your home. I would say average, they're maybe $100 a month, $150 a month. So that miner, they're hoping that you run that miner, that would pay for your fees each month.
That is incredible. Like what I'm hopeful for is that what Patrick's doing and what you're buying into here is like the few to me, this is like the Bitcoin Citadel that people are talking about, right? It's not like a zombie apocalypse sort of thing. It's like a peaceful community that opts in, just like we opt into Bitcoin, that opts into sort of a way of life and a way of living. And as I recall, there's like a DAO that like your HOA is really sort of some sort of means of like voting as a community on any changes or anything, but you're all sort of locked in and agreeing to broadly like the principles under which you'll operate, if my memory serves me right, which I just think is an amazing thing. Because like when I talk about my issues with government today, it's that, you know, by and large, we've got a far off federal government who has no real interest in my life, no perspective on my needs, desires, anything, making a lot of determinations. And it's not that I'm opposed to some form of governance, but a federal government doesn't make any sense to me. An HOA is annoying. Like the reputation they have in the US is obviously they're annoying. They tell you can't put a fence up, blah, blah, blah. But for a smaller and smaller group of people, whether at the family level, a small community level, to be making those decisions together and saying, hey, we're going to reject this particular thing that you want to do for the sake of this community that you've agreed, that you've opted in to be a part of, not simply because you were born here, but because you bought a lot at Veritas Village, for example, you know, that's how we're going to decide what you can and can't do versus, Congress, you know, U.S. Congress making those decisions. To me, to me, that's what's so beautiful about it. It's not that you have unlimited freedom to do anything and everything you ever wanted, but you are operating within confines that you've consented to. Is that maybe a way of framing what you're describing here?
Yeah. They say often like there, you can do as long as you can do whatever you want, as long as you're not bothering anybody else. And as far as like the HOA thing, it's not really, like you said, it's not a typical HOA like we would have in the US. There's no president saying, you know, it's not like that. It's just if there's a change or something you want to see differently, you just bring it up and people will just talk about it. And, you know, it's simple.
I love that. Cause like even in the town that I live in, I have an illegal 125 gallon fuel reserve tank on my property and nobody can see it. It's like if law enforcement showed up to my house, they wouldn't even know where it is. But technically, it's not allowed because they make this blanket rule that just applies to everyone. There's no workaround or anything. You'd have to fight with the government. And So I just tell them I didn't bring any attention to it. Hopefully they don't watch this podcast. But it's those sorts of things that it just make no sense. But in an environment like this, you can just operate as a, you know, like as a mini free market. And as long as you, you know, don't violate the non-aggression principle, then you get to live in peace. And it's and the other cool thing, I think what it sounds like to me, based on talking to Tony, talking to you, talking to Patrick, is it's by virtue of the like-mindedness of the community, you're probably more likely to benefit from the changes that other people make, because they'll invite you into their prosperity and into the perks and amenities that they choose to employ in their deploy in their homes. To me, this is just like, you know, about as good as it gets. I will say, Corey, I live on a family compound with my brother, his family, my sister. Like it's just our little private. So we sort of have that set up here in the US. The drawback that you really hit on is the climate in St. Louis, Missouri is probably not the climate that you experience. So I understand your desire to escape to the tropics. Is the speaking of the climate and the environment, are the beaches in Panama as amazing as I would imagine?
Honestly, we've never made it to the beaches.
No way.
So
you're a rural mountains guy. You just want to like get away, be far from people.
I mean, I would go. It's always worked out with time or things that we had planned. I guess I should take that back. There was a trip we took last time to Tobaga Island. It's a ferry that'll pick you up and take you out there. It's a half an hour ride. And so, but it was a private island, but okay. We did spend a day out there. So
how's cost of living? Like, everything pretty affordable?
So if I did find out that if you're there's a big difference between being a resident and just an expat or you know, with no residency, if you're just a tourist, I should say. There's a big, everywhere you go, you have to, it's advisable to show your residency card, because you'll get, you know, discounts. So I sometimes forget that. And we would go out to dinner. Dinners, food is expensive, you know. So
everywhere.
And now this is within the city. So this is kind of in the business district. Everything is going to, the cost of living is going to be a little bit more. When we, you know, we usually get an Airbnb. Those are very affordable. Probably half or a third of what you would get them for in the US. It's, you know, they're pretty nice. But yeah, I guess I know for sure when you live outside of the city, people often said the cost of living is like a third of what it is in the US.
Wow. That's incredible.
And the healthcare too. Most people don't even, if you're healthy, you don't even carry health insurance.
Really? So you pay cash if you need something. Yeah. It's reasonable.
It's so cheap. It's so inexpensive. I know if it was last year, one time Patrick had fallen or something, and he had some rib issues and maybe some other stuff, and they did x-rays. He went to the hospital, had, you know, everything, whatever's all entailed with that. And his bill was $140.
Unbelievable. So if anyone listening is in the US or probably Europe, and I guess a lot of Europe is socialized healthcare, but in the US, you know, you're being robbed every time you have to go somewhere, and you're paying a, you know, $5,000 deductible and then co-pays and all of this nonsense.
And everything is like that. I mean, and they have great healthcare too. I mean, it's one of the top rated healthcare systems in the world. The doctors there, a lot of them are trained in the US, and, you know, in the Novo back there. But it's a lot of people, I mean, there's a lot of misconceptions about countries like that. People just think that they're third world countries, there's no development, and, you know, they really get the wrong idea. And I said, you know, you really got to see it to appreciate it.
Yeah, man, amazing. Okay, so we've talked a lot about Panama. I think, and I wouldn't be surprised if I come back to that, just because my intrigue is always quite high on that particular subject. But you told me a story when we were talking yesterday about hearing about Bitcoin for the first time in 2014. And I would start at the beginning. So you'd sort of been something, it sounds like something of a gold bug. You'd been buying silver. You understood the principles of sound money, at least to a large degree. What was the story of finding out about Bitcoin, and what was your initial reaction?
Yep. So I worked with, actually, it was my best friend. We worked together. We did everything together. We worked together. We would go fishing together. We went hunting, or just did everything together. I mean, where he went, I went. And one morning, actually in March in 2014, I still remember the day, and he came into work and he's like, he goes, I got something for you. He said, he said, you really need to invest in this Bitcoin thing. Now, he didn't know a lot about it. He had heard about it. He was a huge Joe Rogan listener. And I believe Andreas Antonopoulos was on Rogan. And that's where that came from. And he came in and was telling me about it. And he said, this is it. Now, I didn't realize it at the time, but he was always about 10 years ahead of everything. Like he was like my mentor at the time. I just didn't know it. So he'd be like, you need to do this, and you need to do this. And everything manifested, everything he told me that I should do, it all came true. So I immediately after he kind of told me about it a little bit, I just flat out said, no. There's no way, that's never, ever going to work. The government's going to shut it down. It's electronic. How do you do this? How do you do that? And, you know, and he didn't really have any answers to that because he had just heard about it himself. So I said, no, I said, gold is the way to go. I said, that's, you know, it's real. It's tangible. I can see it, touch it, feel it. You know, I'm like, that's the best, you know? So I really just let it go after that. And never really thought about it again until early 2017. I happened to pick up my phone and I'm like, you know, I wonder what this Bitcoin thing is. So I just decided to check the price. So at the time when he told me about it, Bitcoin was like $350. And then when I checked the price in 2017, it was like, say, $1,000 in the beginning of the year. I'm like, oh, man, maybe I should have bought some at $350, you know, and I let it go for a little longer, and I would check it maybe periodically, a couple times a week, once a week, whatever it was. And it kept rising. Now, I had no idea we were in a bull run. I mean, I didn't know anything about that. And so I kept watching. I'm like, well, maybe I should buy some just in case. So I believe it was like June-ish. And I happened to be working with some IT people who were into Bitcoin, or I should say, crypto, because it was like everything, you know. What, so they kind of helped me get some stuff set up, to set up a wallet, to help me set up an exchange. I think I was using Coinbase at the time, and we just started buying it. And after that, it was like I never quit. So we would always allocate. I always did dollar cost averaging every week. I would just take out, you know, and buy it that way, and I just kept doing that. And I still wasn't really that serious about it, because I was doing other things too. I was buying Litecoin and XRP and, you know, whatever, anything. Because I had no idea what Bitcoin truly was. So I was doing it for more dollars. That was my end game or end goal at the time. So a few more years.
So did you see it when you first started dollar cost averaging? Did you see it as, and you say you didn't understand what it was, did it feel like something of a speculative bubble? Like, I think more people are going to get into this, and so I'll earn more dollars because people are, you know, trying to figure it out. There was no, like, was there no concept that maybe there are going to be these hardcore longtime hodlers, and they're saving up for the future of money, not they're going to be flipping it? Like, when did that?
I was really oblivious to that in the beginning. Okay. All I had on my mind, I just looked at it like a stock. That's okay. All I was doing, thinking, well, it's going to go, if it continues to go up, you know, maybe I'll sell a portion of it and take the cash out, you know, and do stuff like that. So I did do things like that as time went on. So when it was probably in 2020, that's when the light bulb went on. And then I'm like, Cause then I started reading more. I started watching more videos. I started just, you know, really getting into it. And then I got, you know, then I started allocating more money to it, and I got out of everything else. Whatever altcoins I had, I sold everything and went solely into Bitcoin. And then, right, and then that's sort of the beginning of going down a rabbit hole. And once you start to go down there, there is no end. So it just got deeper and deeper and deeper. I started allocating more money. I'm like, well, if I can do $100, you know, whatever it was, I can do X amount of dollars. I can do more. And then I just went crazy with it. And I still do. Like everything I can put in there, I do. I even asked my employer to pay me in Bitcoin, but he didn't think that was going to happen. So, but yeah, 2020 was my real aha moment where then I realized, hey, this is not going to go away, and this is the future.
Was there a particular concept that you remember clicking in 2020 that you said, this is why I'm dumping altcoins, this is why I'm going into Bitcoin 100%? Was it COVID? Was there something else? Because I had the same experience. I don't know that I could pinpoint. Like for me, the maybe the best I could pinpoint was I got in 2022. So I'm still something of a noob. But it was in 2022, big bear market, FTX, BlockFi, Celsius, everything's crashing. And the pattern I noticed was the toxic Bitcoin maxis were right about all of this. They called it 100%. And for me, I wanted to be on the side of it wasn't so much that every aspect of Bitcoin had fully resonated probably, but I wanted to be on the side of the people who seemed to really have a grasp as to what was going on. And then that kind of led me further and further down the Bitcoin only path until, you know, I had no shit coins, nothing. Was there something for you that stands out that you were like, ah, this is why I'm going to dump everything for Bitcoin?
I'm sure there was. I like you, I can't exactly pinpoint a moment. I think it was just the more I read about it, the more I studied it. And because then when you're sort of on that side of the fence, then you start to realize like what fiat really is, and you start understanding the Fed a little bit more, and you start understanding inflation a little bit more. And it's like, you know what? I don't want any part of that. And I think just all those things combined and so I don't know if there's one determining fact that kind of got me there, but I know that so I tried the Celsius thing with yield. So I sent them Bitcoin. I got a loan. I immediately withdrew the money and I bought Bitcoin with it. And I didn't keep it on the exchange. I put it into cold storage, but I still had a loan. So it's just an interest only loan for a year and a half or whatever, you know, whatever I took it out for. So, but that didn't work out. Obviously they went bankrupt, and I was telling, there were some other people that I was working with at the time, and they also had money on Celsius. And I said, I don't know what exactly is coming down the pipeline. I said, but you absolutely need to withdraw your Bitcoin off Celsius, like right now, like it's, or wherever it is, any exchange. I'm like, this isn't something you can wait a week on or 2 weeks on. Something is happening and you need to get, and I don't even remember what I saw or what it was that made me be like, it just can't stay on there. Well, there were some, they didn't listen. And then, you know, when they went bankrupt, they sort of lost it. The Celsius ended up doing some distributions later on, but it never amounted to anything that, you know, that your initial investment.
Yeah, I think if I recall, all these exchanges gave you the dollar denominated amount while Bitcoin had, you know, pumped 4x or something in the meantime. And
it wasn't.
Yeah, it was. I feel very fortunate that I was sort of forged in a bear market and around a lot of chaos, because I think if I'd been dabbling prior, then seeing all that go down, I might have just panicked and said, okay, this is a scam, and not taking the time to dig in deeper. Do you remember if there was like a particular, was there a particular book or video or content creator that you were watching that really helped you on your Orange Pill journey?
My journey is a little bit different now than it was, you know, obviously when I started. So there were a lot of them, and I didn't know. I was still in the era of trying to sort out all the noise, and I remember that being a big thing. Like, you got, and I'm like, man, you got to ignore a lot of this, because. And I was trying to follow people that traded Bitcoin. I never traded Bitcoin, but I was following people that were that. I'm like, man, these guys are pretty smart. You know, they're, well, at least they say they're doing good. And but I'm like, I don't think I want to get into that. But as far as like the videos, I know that I would watch like Saifedean, and I would watch Andreas, and you know, there and some other ones, and like Matthew Gratter's got awesome videos. So I would watch a lot of those. And like I said, the more I got into it, the more I'm like, you can't get enough. You just can't get enough of it. But
I know that sentiment. It's like a good drug, and one that doesn't kill you but makes your life more prosperous and free. It's just interesting. I'm always curious to hear like what that tipping point was for people, because there are so many resources, and especially just a few years ago, I felt like the signal was much higher than it is today. It's much easier, I think, because of a lot of the things we sort of gripe about on the show, you know, from time to time, is the, you know, are the treasury companies, and I think things that are bullish for Bitcoin's price, but I think are a big distraction from really all of the principles that you've discussed, like this idea of self-sovereignty and, you know, moving to a location that respects your right to freedom. And I mean, you were in cold storage within a couple of years of, you know, really beginning your Bitcoin journey in earnest. And I think a lot of people are still sitting on the sidelines, especially today, not fully appreciating what Bitcoin is. Like, they understand Bitcoin is going up because there are problems in the world, but not recognizing that the true revolution is the promise of self-custody, that you don't have to trust someone else. Do you have a moment that you realize that, you know, self-custody was the answer? Because it sounds like even when you were sort of dabbling with Celsius, you were like, I took out a loan, I bought Bitcoin, I took it into self-custody. Like, why did you do that? Because most people just keep it on the exchange, or just, you know, find, you know, some cheap, crappy hardware wallet that they're going to, you know, maybe move it to. What was it for you?
So actually, my accountant mines Bitcoin also. And he's the one that got me into the self-custody. We always talked that, I mean, that's really the most of our conversation whenever I go and visit with him. So my first cold wallet was a Ledger. I'm not even sure if, I don't even know if Cold Card was even out then. I don't even know if Foundation was out then, but so he's the one that recommended it to me, that you need to get this in cold storage. So I bought a Ledger and I put everything on there. So it was really him that did everyone.
That is that's the best accountant I've ever heard. I haven't heard a lot of stories about accountants or anyone who work in sort of traditional fiat recommending cold storage. If anything, they say it's speculative, stay away from it, put 1% in just for fun, that kind of thing. So I think you found the right accountant. Okay. I want to spend part of our show talking about I said you're the quintessential Bitcoiner, because there are some things I know about you that the audience doesn't yet. And you talked about, you know, your plan B, moving to Panama, freedom, stacking sats, all these good things. You also do all of the other things that Bitcoiners are supposed to do, right? You've been a carnivore. I want to talk about that first, but you have done Olympic weightlifting, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Let's start with carnivore, because the fact that you gave me yesterday that blew my mind was, I was under the impression this whole carnivore thing started maybe a decade ago. And you've got Saifedean, who's almost at a decade, I think, of being a carnivore. Sean Baker, who's done the carnivore thing for 8 years or something like that. How long have you been doing carnivore? And then tell me the story of how you got into that.
So I've been doing it for 25 years.
That's incredible.
and I got the way I got into it. So I've always worked out. I've always had personal trainers and coaches. So when I got, after I didn't Olympic weightlift anymore, I got into strength training only. So I was young, maybe 22 years old when I started that. And I always had a coach. And so, and he was the one, but we didn't, it wasn't called carnivore then. It was more like, it was more along the lines of like an Atkins diet or keto. But you know, and you could have just did whatever you wanted with that, but it was still high fat meat based, you know, a lot of eggs, butter, beef, turkey, fish, whatever, you know, chicken. So that was, even though, like I said, even though it wasn't called, we didn't call it carnivore then, but we still ate the same way. So, and my coach at that time, you know, he was into all that. He went to school for this type of thing. And so he got me into it. And I didn't always do it the same. I didn't do it the same way that I do it now. Now I'm super hardcore. You know, and as you go along, you learn, obviously. And so just your body changes over time. And, you know, sometimes you got to make some adjustments and just whatever works for you. And now it's down to an absolute science. Like there, I can manage anything now. And it's actually really awesome. And
so you started eating high fat, low carb during the, maybe not the peak of low fat, you know, high carb craze and the food pyramid and everything I grew up with in the 90s. Did you ever have concerns? Because everyone had to be anyone you talked to besides maybe your trainer had to be telling you, you're going to have a heart attack tomorrow. This is going to kill you. Like, did you get blood work done that freaked you out because your LDL was high? Or like, was there any of that along the way in the early years?
I got criticized daily. Nonstop, I was criticized, but I didn't care because it felt right to me, and I kind of base a lot of things off of that, and it just felt right to me. It was working. I'm like, I don't know what you, I know what you're seeing, and I understand where your concerns are coming from. I mean, these were people were telling me that I was eating wrong, and there wasn't one of them that was by no means in good shape. They had no right to. I'm like, well, I'm not so sure I want to do it the way you're doing it because, you know, that doesn't look like the right path. I said, but yeah, even to this day, people question that. They're like, well, you don't have any variety, or you don't have, you know, you got to have fruit, or you got to have vegetables, and you have some carbs. And I said, well, I don't think I do. And it works out, but that's always going to be the case. No matter what you do, no matter how well it works, people are always going to, you know, there's always going to be haters. But I get blood work done. Actually, every 3 months I get blood work done, and the numbers always come back near perfect.
So even because I told you I used to do strict carnivore. I'm more animal based now. So fruit, raw honey, raw milk. I'll do sweet potatoes, and that's really about it besides just eating mostly meat and hitting, you know, high protein, good, healthy amount of saturated fat, I think. But then, you know, carbs are my fuel source. I'm trying to remember what my blood work was when I was doing strict carnivore. My LDL was a little over 200, and my mainstream doctor, who's no longer my mainstream doctor. I don't have a mainstream doctor. Saifedean's brother is my doctor now. He was like, I was 34 at the time, I think. And he's like, hey, like, if you don't stop doing what you're doing, like, we're going to need to get you on statins here in the next couple of years. And I was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. You're going to put a 30 something on statins because of 200 LDL while I'm eating zero processed food. Like I literally haven't eaten dessert in coming up, I think 3 years this month, maybe. And like that accounts for nothing to the mainstream medical community, apparently. So hats off to you for just putting up with it, especially 25 years ago. I can only imagine the resistance then, because now at least it's a thing.
Yeah.
People are talking about it. It feels a little more trendy and something to try. How is your, so you said carnivore 25 years ago was a little bit different. Like it tended to incorporate more. Now, are you like beef, salt, butter, water, eggs, like that's it? Or like, how have you dialed it in further? And feel free to like give sort of your protocol, like what is it that you do?
Yeah. So steak is number one, steak and butter and salt. And then I will, once in a while, I'll mix it up. Not because I get bored with steak. I've literally eaten steak for weeks on end and you just never get sick of it. You never get bored. You never get tired of it. It's so, but then sometimes if I feel like changing up, so I'll eat a lot of chicken. Chicken doesn't really have any fat in it. So you got to kind of minimize that a little bit. But I add a lot of butter, so that kind of helps. I do eat fish, but not really a lot. I never eat pork. There's something, I don't know what it is. There's something about pork that doesn't sit well with me. It doesn't really work out. Turkey is good. That's really eggs, you know, but that's the extent of it. And then I'll just kind of change it up, whatever I want, you know, whatever I want to do. I mean, like I said, there's been, it would go 2-3 weeks and all I would eat was steak. But I eat as much as I can. And generally I only eat one meal a day and it's always at the end of the day. It's after work, after I'm done working out. So it's probably 8 o'clock at night that I would eat. And I'll eat as much as I can. If I can eat 3-4 pounds of beef, I will. Can't always do that, but that's it. I'll eat till I'm absolutely full. And I'll just do that once a day.
Do you adapt when you're traveling or anything like that? Because that's everyone, like, this to me, this is a cop out, but it's an excuse a lot of people make is, well, when I'm traveling, because like when I travel, I'll eat, you know, 8 McDonald's hamburger patties plain, you know, and it's not the best quality beef. My understanding though is no seed oil. It's like salt and pepper, but it's the best you can do sometimes when you're in a pinch.
Right.
Do you have to adapt it at all when you're, you know, moving around or doing other things or have a change of plans or what?
Mm-hmm. So I have a little portable grill that I put in the back of my truck. And so I'll cook out in the parking lot at the hotels I stay at, and I'll just pack up all my food for the week. I just bring steak when I do that.
Yeah. That's great. Maybe that's why I need, is it just like a little George Foreman kind of thing or something, or,
Yep, okay. Just sits in the back of the truck when I'm all done. I just make my meal, come in and eat it. And
okay, so for anyone who's sitting here making excuses as to why you can't do it, follow Corey's guidance. So, okay, another topic we talked about, and I want to hear how the carnivore diet has helped or hindered. You said you've been weightlifting for forever. You have trainers. I think you said you have a trainer that you've worked with, like the same trainer for a couple decades, maybe.
Yeah.
How'd you get into weightlifting? What, I'm like a protocol guy. I love to hear like, what is it that you do generally? And what's your approach? And then you can tell me a bit about how carnivore has helped that, or if you feel like you've missed out on any gains by, you know, eliminating carbs.
So I started when I was 12. And at that time there was, it was more, that was in the 80s. So it's more bodybuilding kind of thing. And I just had friends in my, like I had one of my really, really good friends, his dad was a bodybuilder. So I'm like, oh, that's what I need to do. You know, I didn't know any better. I don't know if they have them anymore, but they're called Muscle and Fitness magazines. And we were like huge into that. And we're like, oh, I want to be like that guy. I want to be like that guy. I'm going to do what he does, you know? And so I did that for a while. And then as I got a little bit older, when I probably got into 8th grade, then I started Olympic weightlifting and I had a coach for that and probably did that for 4 or 5 years. But that's really, really hard on your body. That's a lot of deadlifts, a lot of squats, a lot of bench pressing, a lot, you know, it's just, you're really, really beat up your body. So as time passed, you know, I probably got whatever, 20, 21 years old. And then I think I was already a member of this gym at the time. And when I first started there, I wasn't able to drive. So I'd have to have my mom give me a ride. You know, I was probably 15 years old and I would go there and stuff. But so I met my coach at that time. I didn't know that, you know, he wasn't then, but as time went on. So I remember there was a day I was in there doing my thing and he said, hey, I'm starting this new program. Wondering if you would be interested in trying it out for a couple of weeks or a month. You have absolutely nothing to lose. If it works for you, great. If not, so be it. So that's when he got me into this like super high resistant, low time strength training. So everything is timed. I don't do anything. There's no reps. You don't count reps. Everything is based on time. So it's time. It's time your muscles are under load. They've only got a certain amount of time before they begin to inroad. And if you burn them out after that, it does no good. So he got me into this, and I did that for a very, very long time. And then he started introducing these new machines. Though when I started, they were called Medex machines, and they're still really good to this day. But now he's got something called a Vive. It's VIIV, and it's basically a stat. It's one complete machine. And you work your entire body on this one machine, and you're always pushing on a load cell with 100% of your force. And it's timed. It's only, I think my time under load is 5 seconds. So I can do a complete body workout in like 2 minutes. And everything is recorded. There's an iPad. It records everything. It records your strength. It records your improvement. It records everything. And that's all I do now. And I only do it once a week. But everything, you know, you can watch your strength it improve right on the screen. So it doesn't lie. You know, it has
what's it called?
It's called a Vive, VIIV, Vive Fitness.
VIIV.
There are actually only, there's a commercial version and a residential version. I believe there's only 5 trainers in the United States that do that. They're sort of Europe based.
Okay. But it's full body.
Yep. And you're just pushing on a plate. You're pushing on a load cell and it just records everything, but you push with absolutely everything you got for 5 seconds. And you want to talk about people not believing you when you do something. I mean, I thought carnivore was hard to convince people. Not a lot of people do it because they're like, no, you know, you got to do it the traditional way. You got to do reps and you got to use free weight. And, you know, it's just, there's no way you can get a good body workout. But I've been doing, I started that probably 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. My strength has improved immensely. And it was really developed for people with osteoporosis. Cause it builds,
okay.
It'll build bone density back.
Okay. So is this the fitness industry's like hidden secret? Because they don't want you to know. They want you to keep buying plates and bells and barbells and all that. Or what? Like this, it sounds too good to be true. Which I'm open minded to anything at this point, especially coming from someone like yourself. But you're telling me two minutes a week is your workout,
yep.
And I assume based on the way you're eating, the way you're living, I assume underneath that hoodie you've got some muscle. Would I be impressed to see like what you're doing on this thing?
Probably.
Okay.
I'm not so sure if they're trying to withhold it from the public. I think people just don't believe it. They just don't buy it. Is a big part. That's what I'm going to buy, and that's what I'm going to have shipped to Panama. It'll be hard to get people to believe that could work. I had my doubts at first too, but I believed in my trainer and I said, if you say that this works, then I believe it, because you're never going to put me on the wrong path deliberately. So I love it.
I imagine the risk of injury is much, much, much less than throwing weights around in a gym.
There's
all day.
No movement.
Like that's, yeah.
Zero movement. I mean, you can't get hurt.
This is okay. I've got the site pulled up, and as soon as we get off this call, I'm looking more because this is fascinating to me. Okay, let's see. Where do I want to take? Oh, so I'm curious. Just by chance, did you do any like shows or competitions or anything in your weightlifting career, or was it always just a hobby?
Just a hobby. It's kind of weird, but I'm a little self-conscious. Like I never take my shirt off. Like if we go to the beach and it'd be 150 degrees and I wouldn't take my shirt off. It's a weird, weird thing. So I couldn't see myself getting on a stage and doing that.
Nothing wrong with that. Modesty is better than the alternative. Okay, let's spend a few minutes then on Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So again, you're checking all the boxes as a Bitcoiner, going down the right paths. When did you get into BJJ? How long you been doing it? Why did you start doing it?
So the same friend that got me into Bitcoin is the one that got me into Jiu-Jitsu. And he would every day hound me and tell me that I need to come in, I need to come in, I need to do this. And it's you know, it's really, really intimidating walking into a place like that for the first time. So I was scared and I said, I'm like, yeah, I'll try it. But I never did. And like 6 months had passed. And finally, I went up to him one day and I said, all right, you have to go with me, though. I said, and then I'll feel, you know, at least I'll know somebody there. So we did, and we went, and that was 13 years ago. And I've never stopped, but as my journey went on, you know, I loved it from day one. So they always say that jiu-jitsu, either you're going to love it or hate it. You're going to do it full time or you're not. So in the beginning, I probably only did it like a couple of days a week. And I did like it, but I wasn't sure how much yet. So I probably did that for a year or two. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm never quitting this. So then I really started ramping up, and then I started doing competitions and just really getting more and more involved.
So do you like it for the workout or the skills that you acquire? Is it a social thing for you, combination?
I was, you know, it really helps. Like it's a jiu-jitsu and the way that I work out complement each other. So what the way that I work out, that increases your fast twitch muscle fibers. So that's really, so you get this really explosive strength when you need it. And that's awesome for jiu-jitsu. I can turn it on, I can turn it off, I can do whatever, you know. So it's that really helped. That's one thing. And as far as jiu-jitsu really helps me manage, I don't want to say my weight, but it helps manage. It just kind of everything goes together, jiu-jitsu, working out, and then eating. It helps me to stay more toned, more cut, more, you know, more lean that way. Also, I always felt like when I was in a crowd, people were looking at me, and it always seemed to me like, you know, they wanted to engage somehow and not a good way. And so I always felt not good about that. This takes that all away. You know, now I feel good about walking anywhere, and I would be able to at least defend myself. And I always thought too, if I can't defend myself, I can't defend my family or my friends. So that was a huge part of it as well.
Yeah, no, man, I couldn't agree with you more on that. I've got a 4.5-year-old son, and I'm not going to have a lot of requirements on them in terms of some of the things that they do. But I think for him in particular, even more so than my two daughters, I think BJJ is going to be a requirement. We got a gym up the road from us, weightlifting, you know, just some of these things that I wish that I had been doing growing up. And when I have a bit of time unlocked, when my kids are older, yeah, maybe it's something I'll try once he starts going. I can do it alongside of him to some degree. He's obviously very young, but these are the things I would love to start doing. I've got an 18-month-old and a 6-year-old, you know, around my 4.5-year-old. So my time when I'm not working is rather limited and dedicated to, you know, taking care of them. But it's one of these things that I'm sort of the same way as you, like walking into a gym where I don't know anyone and, you know, getting my ass beat, you know, trying to learn a new skill. It's like not exactly the biggest thing, the best sounding idea for a guy who's a little bit more introverted, but I'll get there. So maybe you'll be the boost to get me to Panama, get me to BJJ. And I'm telling you, man, I'm always looking for fitness hacks. So I'm going to check out this Vive fitness thing too.
I am a huge advocate for women doing jiu-jitsu. I mean, like I will, any chance I get to tell anyone, you know, my daughter's in college, and I know at Madison they have a jiu-jitsu there's somebody there that puts on a class and I fall. And she did take it for about a year when she was little. And she ended up not doing it after about a year. But I'm like, I try to show her some stuff, you know, but she's like, yeah, whatever, dad, you know, I'll be fine. I'm like, I'm sure you will. But, you know, I would just love it if you would get involved in this a little bit, just to know anything. Cause you know, if you got an attack or something like that, they never expect you to resist. Right. So if you just show a little bit of resistance and just enough to get away and run, that's all you need.
Yeah. That's a good way for, I think my reluctance, obviously for practical reasons, I could not agree with you more. My daughter is, not very competitive. And so like she played soccer for the first time a couple of years ago, and like she stood on the field and just talked to her friends and, you know, like she's helping to like get in there. And so grappling, I'm not really sure how much I could get her to do, but it's going to be worth a try. So I'll give that a whirl. In the meantime, she's very excited for ballet to start here next week. So that's the stage of life for us.
That's good. That's
true. Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, Corey, so I've got one last question for you. I think I completely forgot to prepare you for this. Is there anything though that we haven't touched on first that you wanted to share or expand upon?
No, I think we covered most of my life.
A lot of ground, my friend. Okay. So my last question is always, what is an unpopular opinion that you have, and you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with it?
That's kind of an easy one. I am not an advocate for governments custodying Bitcoin or having it on their balance sheet at all. I know that it's for everyone, but I mean, in my opinion, they started this whole mess. So I just don't understand why people encourage this. I don't get that at all. Bitcoin treasury companies are one thing, but as far as nation states doing, I mean, there's obviously, as you know, there are tons of people that push for this. And I think a lot of that is just because they want the price to go up. I absolutely don't condone that at all.
Man, you're right. You will offend some Bitcoiners with that. I couldn't possibly agree with you more. The only way the government extracts value is by just that extraction, theft, and them buying Bitcoin may pump my bags, but it is not worth the downstream consequences in my view. I don't want them to have any more power than they already have. I want them to have 1% of the power that they currently have. And I don't think them buying Bitcoin accomplishes that goal.
No.
But I agree with you. I mean, you know, I can't stop from happening. Bitcoin is for enemies, even if the enemy is the government. So I love it, man. Well, hey, Corey, why don't you tell people where they can find you? Is there any way you'd share with people to follow along? Twitter, Noster, anything?
I am on Noster. I don't have a Twitter account. Actually, I'm really not that. My life, it's somewhat private other than this, but I am on Noster. I don't even know what.
I'll see if I can find you. Maybe we can link to you somehow in the show notes. But
other than that, I'm an old fashioned email text kind of guy.
Man, nothing wrong with that. As I said, the quintessential Bitcoiner, living a nice, quiet, private life. I love it. Corey, this has been a blast, man. I think you and I need to get together at some point, have a steak and hang out, because we could have some fun conversations.
Yeah, sounds good.
Awesome. Thanks for joining, brother. Right. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. See ya.
And that's a wrap. Again, hope you enjoyed my conversation with Corey. I know I did. This is my kind of guy. Go follow him on Noster. And of course, do me a huge favor. If you are enjoying the show, give us a like, subscribe, comment, share it with someone. We would really, really appreciate that. And if you need help taking your Bitcoin into proper 100% self-custody or getting a Plan B residency in the beautiful country of Panama, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can also help you protect your online life, set up a privacy phone, and more. We'll get you started with solo mining. Everyone needs to be running a node. We do all of that stuff. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.